Hello, welcome to the Website 101 podcast. I'm Sean Smith, your co-host, and with me every time is Mike Mella.
Hello, Sean.
Hey, Mike. And today we're going to be talking about content writing with returning guest, friend of the show, Gaurav S. Iyer.
I like the way that sounds. Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, good to have you back, Gaurav. Content marketing, right? Content marketing.
That's right.
Yeah, here we go.
So Gaurav was back with us in Season 2, Episode 8, talking about copy editing and copywriting, which was a really good episode. And we'll link to that in the show notes. Be sure to check it out.
Yeah, Gaurav, you're our first return guest on this podcast that's been on twice.
Sean mentioned that to me. It's an honor, guys. Thanks a lot.
We actually have another returning guest. We're recording with her next week. So Angie Herrera will be back.
Okay, see, now I don't want it.
No, but you're first. You're first, and that's the important thing.
All right, I'll take it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
So, Gaurav, could you help us out by telling us what exactly is content marketing?
Sure. Content marketing is essentially anything that could be construed as, you know, a piece of content unto itself. So if we're talking about an article, or we're talking about a blog, or a video, a podcast, all of those things are, you know, something that a user would come to because they want to consume it specifically. Like, it's not interrupting their day in any way. They've come there to consume that piece of content. And yet that piece of content is driven to drive, it's meant to drive sales. So it is supposed to attract an audience by itself because it is content in the same way that, you know, a TV show is content. Right. It's supposed to be of interest to the audience. But once they come there, it's done in such a way that ultimately at the end, they'll go away with a good impression of your brand. And hopefully that down the road, that'll lead to sales.
Well, that is actually really interesting, because that's kind of why I started the podcast initially, is to add content to my site. I actually haven't got any sales from it yet, but I have gotten a couple of inquiries and emails from people, which is great. And honestly, the main goal is about having some fun and helping people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's different than from just promoting a website in general, I guess. Is that the idea? Like, it's sort of more, yeah, I don't know, drilled down than that, more focused than promoting an entire website. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, even without knowing it, everyone lives in a content marketing world, right? So, Sean, there was some instinct that you had there when you started up this podcast, I guess, which was, when people are coming to my site, I want to be able to differentiate myself a little bit from everyone else by having delivering some value to prospective clients without even, you know, maybe it doesn't convert to a sale instantly, but what it does maybe is defend your business and your expertise a little bit.
Yeah, it adds to your authority.
It adds to your authority, credibility. People get to understand who you are a little bit better, get to understand what you do, what your knowledge base is, just from hearing you, you know, you talk to Mike and then you talk to me. And that's somehow going to give them a better sense of, okay, I can trust this guy. I understand what he does, and I know a little bit more about him. Whereas if they were just coming to do a credibility check and all they see is a website but with absolutely no content, that's a little less authoritative. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the baseline for a lot of businesses in 2021, is that you have to establish trust through by going that extra step now and delivering content.
Okay.
And those emails that you generated, I mean, that's lead generation, right? So even if it instantly doesn't convert to a sale, it's giving you, it's broadening your network and giving you some leads.
Awesome. All right. So one of the terms that I've heard about in the context of content marketing sometimes is a funnel. Could you tell us sort of what a funnel is in this context?
Sure. Yeah. A funnel is both it's a marketing term and it's a business term. And what it applies to is your process for getting a particular sale. So if you imagine a funnel when you're pouring something into, let's say, a bottle of water, mm-hmm. At the top of the funnel, it's going to be broader. And the idea there is that you're touching a broader audience.
Okay.
And so you can think of the width of the funnel as being related to the breadth of your audience. Mm-hmm. And at the top, with content marketing, you're touching probably more people than you would with a very focused, practical sales cycle, which is closer to the bottom. And the reason for that is that you can sort of weed out people with content marketing. You can see who's interested. And once they've read that content, they said, okay, this is for me. They can make an informed decision and seek to follow up with you. And so it acts as an automatic filter that brings in stronger leads into your business. And that's as they go down the funnel. You now have this assurance of, okay, I'm not wasting time by following up in person with this this lead, because they've already expressed interest and they know enough about me for it to have been an informed decision.
So it's kind of like pre-filtering or pre-sales without actually having the interaction.
Yeah, and that's right. It adds another filter to your business just so that you're being as productive as you possibly can, right? You're not chasing a bunch of cold leads.
Yeah, and I noticed that if you look at Google Analytics of a website, there is an option in there that has something to do with funnels. And it's the same sort of description you just gave, where it starts off with basically everyone who enters your site. But then as they travel through your site, some of them go into this page, and then a fraction of those people will go follow into this other page. And it sort of lets you know where your more, devoted, I guess, visitors are ending up, because they're drilling right through to that final page, right? Something similar to that.
Yeah, and Google Analytics is invaluable for looking at those metrics and positioning your CTAs, positioning your ads on your page, because if you get to see, okay, the most devoted of my following end up on this page and they're getting about halfway down the page, then you probably want to have a button at that point that says,
convert or do something.
Do something.
Yeah. Contact me.
Right. Do what I want you to do at this point. Let them do it at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, really interesting. So content marketing feels very similar to advertising, but I realize that it's not. How is it different? And can you maybe provide an example? I know this is a little bit off the cuff, but maybe you can give an example.
Sure. Let me just start with a brief description of the differences, or maybe it makes more sense to start with the similarities, because there are similarities that you pointed out. Both content marketing and advertising aim to sell something, right? So let's just start there. Yep. They both require carefully chosen words to get through, from your brain or from your brand into the brain of a reader and convince them of something. So they both want to do that. And both are in the attention business, which is that they have to grip your attention in some way. But this is the crucial difference: how they gain your attention is entirely different, right? Those are two different worlds then. Television commercials, billboards, subway posters, even YouTube ads, they're all interrupting the thing that you want to be doing, that you actually came for, in order to grab your attention. And that's what advertising is, right? It cuts into your experience to try and sell you something. But we now live in a very different world where we have more media than ever and we have constant access to it.
No doubt.
Because we're always carrying around these devices and 24/7. We're constantly consuming, media. Mm-hmm. And it's just harder to get people's attention in that world. So bombarding them with ads is not enough anymore. It can do something. It can get, your brand in their head, and there's some familiarity for it, but it may not be enough to...
So that advertising is more about building awareness?
Building awareness, making sure that people sort of have that sense of, oh, I've heard of them before. And maybe 25 years ago, that was enough to get someone to say, oh, I've heard of them before. That's enough. That means they must be good. Mm. And then they'll buy your product. But with more media than ever, it's harder to generate trust. And if it's harder to generate trust and loyalty in a brand, then you have to generate that through content that's interesting by itself. And it needs to draw them in because the content is interesting.
Okay. So would it be accurate to say that content marketing, as opposed to other forms, is more helping people? I mean, this sounds a little bit, blue sky, but it sounds like it might be more helping people accomplish things they want to accomplish rather than trying to convince them to do things? Would that be fair?
Well, I like that question.
Yeah, without being too hokey, it is really about delivering value, right? Because people have higher BS radars than they did before.
Right.
they're just more sensitive to the idea that they're being sold to directly. So they like, if you're looking for, you asked for an example, Sean. So let's say you're looking to buy a watch, right? And maybe the reason is that you saw one that you really liked on Instagram, or you saw it in a magazine. But let's go stick with Instagram. You clicked on it, and now watch ads are just following you around the internet, right?
It's happened to me.
Yeah, that's advertising. Right. Company is trying to sear its brand name into your brain through the sheer power of repetitive viewing. But you're not just going to go buy the watch without doing any of your own additional research. At least most people won't anymore.
Well, exactly. It's like, so I want to interrupt for just a second here. Is last weekend, my 9-year-old computer died. Like, just died. I'm pretty sure the power supply died. And I was planning on rebuilding it. Like, I like to build my own PCs. And I already had ideas of what parts I wanted. Well, I had to rush around and figure everything out. But I got to say, my Facebook feed and my Twitter feed are now filled with advertising from Corsair and NVIDIA and all of these other computer part. So it's obviously doing something. They've tracked me with Google, and they're spitting out ads everywhere at me.
Yeah.
But I did my research and chose my parts based on what I know about the technology, not about the advertising.
Right. And I'm sure at one point, whether it was now or before, even though the names Corsair and NVIDIA will be familiar to you, you'll have done it at the bare minimum as a Google search, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. 100%.
And what's coming up when you do a Google search? It's going to be content, right? It's going to be an article that you're going to read. It's going to be a YouTube video that you're going to click on. And that will, even if it's from the company, will inform you about the product. And it has to be driven by value and incidentally inspire you to make a sale. That cannot be the primary focus of content marketing, because if it is, people sniff it out and it erodes your credibility, actually. So it's counterproductive to try and pursue a sale in content marketing. You really want to deliver value.
So content marketing is more about giving people what they want and not asking for anything in return.
Yeah, that's right. It's a giveaway. It's the cost of doing business in 2021.
Yeah, that sounds a lot like something that Jonathan Stark would say, is, you know, you give away content and it draws in your customers and clientele.
I have had that happen before where, you know, I find, you know, some web developer online or whatever who's offering a course for free, and it actually does increase my improve my view of that developer as a person. Like, I think, oh, what a cool guy. He's offering this for free. That's great. Or like free plugins sometimes for CMSs, things like that.
Yeah,
and it really does affect his brand positively for me, anyways.
Absolutely, I'm with Mike, and as soon as Mike talked about that, I was immediately thinking about Wes Boss.
He's the popular one, I guess. He's got tons and tons of content.
He has both free and paid courses, and he runs a podcast with another online and web instructor. They give away tons of content,
right?
They clearly know what they're doing, and I've given them money, and I'll give them money again. So it's working.
So he took you from the top of the funnel all the way to the bottom.
That's right.
Pretty much. Multiple times. It's like I'm at a ride at Disneyland or something. Hi, would you like to be a guest on the show? We'd like to talk with website owners about what you like and what you don't like about the CMS you're using. Is updating your website easy to do? Are there features you wish you had available?
We'd love to hear from users of any CMS, WordPress, Squarespace, Wix, or any other system. Recordings are done virtually, so all you need is a computer and a microphone. Get in touch with us at website101podcast.com/contact. All right, so we alluded to earlier search engines, and you mentioned you like Google Analytics for this purpose. What can you tell us about writing for SEO, search engine optimization, and how that pertains to content marketing for you?
Sure. There's probably more than we could cover in a single podcast on SEO, so I'll just focus in.
Time to bring you back for a third episode.
That's right. Sure. Yeah, happy to. But SEO, I mean, there are people who are just full out SEO experts in the world, so I wouldn't presume to have that knowledge. But you know, I've built a few different media properties in the past, and the way that we focused on distribution was through SEO, so and SEM. So I got some sense of how it works, and really, it's all about something called long tail keywords, right? That's the magic word in SEO is long tail keywords. Because imagine if you have, let's say, microphones. I'm just picking what's in front of me right now, but let's say you wanted to sell a microphone. Mm-hmm. If you tried to plug the word, I think people are familiar with keywords, like putting it in your content so that Google will pick up, oh, okay, this is an article about microphones, right, and will rank it highly if someone is searching microphones. Mm-hmm. And maybe microphones is the most searched keyword in that niche subject matter. But if you try and go for the most popular keyword, everyone else is doing the same thing. And so it's what's called, you know, a high traffic keyword, but it's also a high competition keyword.
Right.
So you're going to get lost in the sea of competition. You're
going to get lost in the sea of content. That's right. And so the trick is to try and find something more specific. Maybe it's podcast microphones. Maybe it's amateur podcast microphones. Maybe it's you find words to pair with your main keyword such that you're getting more and more specific. And perhaps that reduces the amount of traffic that's flowing to that keyword, but there's also less competition. And so where you can find the perfect balance of, you know, traffic versus competition and build your niche expertise in that area, Google will, if you're putting out content consistently in that niche, Google will increase your ranking and mm-hmm. weight you against your peers in that area. And pretty soon when someone is searching that very specific keyword, maybe you're not getting as much as you would get if you were just put microphone, but they're going to be stronger leads. You're going to be higher ranked against your competition. And whoever's coming into that is going to be the person that you're actually trying to get to at the end of the day.
Right. Okay.
So basically what you're saying is by niching down and narrowing your audience or target, you will get less leads, but you're going to get more qualified leads or people who are more likely to go with your service or business.
Yes, that's exactly right. And the only reason it's called a long tail keyword, it's a sort of nerdy stat term where if you look at a probability distribution, you know, the little thin part all the way at the right end or at the left end for that matter is going to be, it's called a tail. Mm-hmm. And so the tails are thinner, but they're more valuable.
Yeah, and the more you know about your own audience, I suppose, the more you can leverage this kind of thing, because you'd have to know, you know, if going back to your example, if you're a microphone producer, you'd have to know that part of your audience is searching for that particular long tail keyword, right? That, you know, podcast microphones or whatever. You'd have to know that you have a segment of your audience that makes podcasts and they need microphones or something like that.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. There, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 2021 or, you know, 1421, knowing your audience when you're selling something is irreplaceable.
Right, right.
And you definitely need to write your copy or hire a professional copywriter to reflect that.
Cough. <That's
right. laughs> Yeah, yes, Cora. Cora
does that too.
Yeah. So I have some experience in this, been running my own business full-time for 10 years now. And when I first started out, I wrote very generic copy. Hey, I'm a Toronto web developer, blah, blah, blah. I don't get very much. And then over time, I started niching it down and being very specific. I focus on, at that time was Expression Engine. Now I focus on Craft CMS. And there's some other things, but I really do get more and better quality leads from this. And I did this with, you know, based on some podcasts that I listened to for business. And so I, basically my personal experience reflects that. And I have a friend in Calgary, he's a copywriter, and he helped me out with some of my copy. And I think it made a big difference. Even though I used to teach writing, he does it full-time professionally.
Right.
Yeah, I'm sure we'd all agree on this call that getting a professional to help you write your content is pretty invaluable, no matter how well you know your business. You don't necessarily know how to present it on the web, you know, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, but not everybody is willing to spend the money on a professional writer. I mean, you may not have it, you may not personally see the value, but I can say that my buddy volunteered to help me out. I didn't ask. And it made a difference. I could just see the quality of the words were much better than what I had written myself.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that it's always best to hire a professional. If you're in a very entrepreneurial situation, maybe, you know, if you can call in a favor from a buddy, that's the perfect situation. But in
I got lucky.
Yeah, but in general, yeah, there's no replacement for expertise. There isn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, Gaurav, what about a newsletter? So, mm-hmm. you know, I've mentioned Jonathan Stark a couple of times. He says that newsletters are the greatest way to do content marketing. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what he says, and I respect him. So, I mean, I'd like to hear your thoughts on this. Do you agree, disagree, or partially agree? What?
And just before you answer, a newsletter is one example that of a feature that our audience up to this podcast could very easily do. Anyone who is running their own website, mm-hmm. even if they don't have a dedicated web team, could set up a newsletter in MailChimp or something and send something out once in a while. So yeah, this is going to be interesting.
Oh yeah, it's definitely something very actionable for a DIY guy.
Yeah, and I just want to point out, I don't know about you, Mike, but if you mentioned MailChimp, part of that may be due to their advertising campaigns, which are on every podcast ever.
That's true, yes, right? They sure are.
So yep. I mean, advertising is, it's not a silver bullet anymore like it used to be perhaps 20 and 30 years ago, but it's clearly still somewhat effective.
That's true.
But yes, newsletters are, I do agree that they're probably the best form of content marketing. My only caveat is that I would say it's a newsletter plus an online blog.
Yes.
Can you clarify that? Are they connected, or are you using the same content in both, or
yes,
different content?
To me, they go hand in hand, right? That okay. your blog on your website, or if it's an article, hub page, whatever it is, if it's the home of all your content, then the newsletter is how you get it out there. So you need a place to sort of host it, and then you need the newsletter to be able to push it out and get it in front of people's eyes. And to me, the email inbox is still the best venue actually for content, even if it's long form content. To me, the email inbox is still the primary location. And it makes me sound, you know, really old when I say that, because everyone wants to hop on the social media bandwagon.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, click through rates for social media are incredibly low, right? So if you're posting a piece of content on social media and you get a 10% click through rate, you are, I mean, pack your bags, go buy a villa somewhere in a tropical country, because obviously you're going to be incredibly successful. But if you're, you know, and that's the barometer for social media, 10% would be like through the, you know, through the roof. But if you're in email, 10% is low. At 10%, you should be worried, because the truth is more people will click on an email when they get it because it's personalized. It feels more intimate. It's in their world, mm-hmm. right? Sort of when someone comes to your house, you just feel a little more comfortable, right? This is your space. But if you're in social media, you're out there in the wilderness, someone bumps into you at a coffee shop, you know, it's fine and it's good, but it's not as comfortable as if you were at home.
That's a really good analogy. Yeah, I never really thought about that. It does feel, because I'm still a fan of email very much, if only because it lets me manage my time. I could read it now, I could read it later. It's up to me. It's still going to be there, that kind of thing. But yeah, you're right. It does feel more intimate when you're reading in an email context than just anywhere on the web. Makes sense.
I want to follow up with what you were talking about there. You said that the content should be on both your blog and your newsletter. What do you think about doing something like a summary in the newsletter that links to the blog article? Or do you feel that it should be full content equally? Or maybe the blog has some content that's not in the newsletter and vice versa?
I actually love the idea of summaries in an email newsletter and then giving someone the option to go deeper. So like I said, the blog is really just a content hub. If no one is coming to your website and then clicking on the blog button and going there, to me that would never bother me, because the newsletter is the point of interest, right? It's the point of distribution, and they're opening it. Maybe they get a bolded header, right? And then a few lines of description as to what that article is all about. And it can be satisfying. It's a little appetizer. If they want the entree, mm-hmm. click on the link.
Right. So I have an example about this. When I have a 9-year-old kid, and when he was born, I signed up for a newsletter called Baby Center, a website called Baby Center. And they send a newsletter every month or something like that with just like one paragraph of like and they track, like they know how old he is because based on when I signed up. So like it would be specific to his age. It would say something like, you know, instilling confidence in a 9-year-old or whatever, and there's a little paragraph and you can click through to read more, and it's free stuff and it's really valuable content, and it's owned by Johnson & Johnson. So, which is an enormous company that sells products for kids, for parents or whatever, right?
They are not sponsoring us.
No, they're not.
They can if they would like to.
They're welcome to reach out. Yeah. I love Johnson & Johnson. Anyway, yeah, so I guess that'd be a good example of they're offering this service that's specific to parenting needs, but it doesn't sort of shill baby shampoo every day kind of thing. Would that be accurate?
That is the perfect example of content marketing there. They weren't trying to sell you up front. They just put out this content because they knew that there's a target market. They know that there's a large enough market of people who have this particular pain point. They know that they have the content and the expertise to be able to, you know, help those people out. So let's just give it to them, and we engender some goodwill that way.
Yeah, right. Okay. So moving on here, you did mention social media and how it's maybe not all it's cracked up to be sometimes. So how do you feel the social media fits into content marketing? If one of our listeners wanted to pursue this kind of field, and they do have social media platforms for their business, what can they do? What should they do?
Well, social media is interesting because it's a great tool for brand building. Like you can really get, once again, in the same way that advertising can create an understanding of what your brand is just through look and feel and a few well-chosen words, social media can do the same. And it can be helpful as a distribution venue for content. It can. I'm not optimistic about the click-through rates, but at volume, like if you have actually a lot of time and you have a large enough audience, social media can be incredibly powerful.
Sounds to me like that might be something that's best suited to like a large company that can have a dedicated social media person on staff. Like a small business with, you know, 1 to 10 employees may not have enough staff to be able to properly monitor their social media channels.
Yeah, unless you have a really talented social media person, right? Even in the 1 to 10 group, if there's someone who really understands the dynamics of social media, who can stay on top of what trending material is available to them and somehow position the brand so that it's building a character that an audience can grip to online, right? Like there's... I'm a business writer, but I even came sort of from the financial journalism world, and typically the only people that I followed were other journalists, but eventually some content marketing people slipped into that bubble, and it's very strange how they did it. There was like a company called Ramp Capital, for instance, and Ramp Capital's their logo is just, you know, someone in a wheelchair. And it's supposed to be that it's a ramp up for your capital, for your money. And it was one of the sassiest accounts on Twitter in the little like finance Twitter bubble. And they clearly have a business. This is not a journalist, right? They have a business. This is content marketing that they're putting out there in all just sassy tweets about finance news.
So they've got their voice and market narrowed down and nailed.
Perfectly nailed. And the only reason that I still know that brand, I have never encountered them anywhere else on the internet, never heard about them through anyone else. I know them singularly through that Twitter account.
Wow.
And that's just speaks to the talent of whoever's running that social media account, is that they just knew what to say at all points to be interesting. Because even social media, like content marketing, like advertising, exists in the attention economy, right? And if you can get attention, that's really what it's about.
Awesome. So staying on topic of social media, everybody knows Twitter and Facebook. Is there any particular social media that you should focus on, or maybe it should be something that's like niche specific to your industry, or is like, hey, TikTok is the new hot thing. Should I hop on the bandwagon and set up a TikTok account because all the cool kids are doing it? Or, you know, like what are your thoughts on jumping onto the latest or should I only focus on the biggest?
In a nutshell, I would probably say go where your audience is.
Yeah.
If you are trying to target teenagers who like to dance, I guess TikTok makes sense. No, I'm joking. For a lot of like B2C consumer brands, especially who are targeting not my generation, but the one that's behind younger than us. Yeah, the one behind us. I TikTok makes a lot of sense because you're going to get eyeballs. The B2C marketing movement on Instagram is actually incredibly powerful, right? So if you're selling apparel or if you're selling any sort of like end consumer good and you go on Instagram, those ads, I will say this, you know, the caveat to Twitter and Facebook and all the rest of them, Instagram click-through rates for their ads are actually pretty impressive.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know what it is about the, well, I have some idea. I don't, it's not my focus or my niche, but, sometimes you get those full size images and they're just so compelling, some of them.
Yeah.
And they're so well targeted that people end up actually buying stuff on Instagram. It's incredible actually at their success.
Wow. That is fascinating.
I think I have actually purchased things, like you said, apparel, like clothing, based on ads I've seen on Instagram. You know, you sometimes see, I don't go to Instagram these days anymore, but I can remember, I'm pretty sure, seeing these videos. They're very short video clips that are super fast, like they're sped up, of like a pair of shoes that are waterproof or something. And they'd show some guy running through a puddle and then he wrings his shoes out like it's a rag or whatever. And it's just really compelling to look at. And you're just like, oh man, maybe I need those shoes. Maybe I need waterproof shoes. I've never purchased waterproof shoes. I'm just an example.
Mike wants to let out his inner five-year-old and run through all the puddles.
Were those the Allbirds?
Yes, it was Allbirds. Okay. And there you go.
I remember that campaign.
I know the brand too. I never bought them. They do look cool, but I've never bought them, but I know exactly what the brand name is. Yeah.
Yeah, something similar. I see ads on Facebook a lot, and at least three times I've clicked through the ad, started filling in the order form, and then stopped. I got so close to doing the impulse buy. I was like, do I really need this? No, but I want it. Your credit card says no, stop. I got so close. They just lost.
Somewhere in that company, there's somebody whose job it is to figure out why you didn't complete that form. Some guy keeps coming to this form and partially filling it, and then he leaves. Get him.
Oh, and actually, I hit the same ad. Like, there's one ad, I can't remember the product, but I remember going to the form on three different occasions in 2 weeks and bailing at the last second because it was like, I really want it because I think it's cool, but I don't need it.
Yeah, you're driving them crazy.
Probably. So, Gaurav, do you have any final tips for copywriters or DIY people who need to improve their copy, but maybe they can't afford to hire somebody right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Before I do, I just want to say, and this is probably me being a little facetious, but although Instagram ads work really well, I would argue all of Instagram or most of Instagram is content marketing. Like everyone on Instagram refers to themselves as a brand.
Yeah.
I don't. Right? I don't.
Do you use it?
Yeah, I post all my photography there.
Well, but in a way, that's your photography brand, right? Sort of?
Yeah, I guess so. But I'm not actually. I'll take it.
Right? It's the first real social media where people weren't going on their like Facebook to connect with their long lost cousins or whatever, but they were going on there consciously to build an identity around themselves. And whether they're, you know, selling vitamin supplements or apparel or whatever it is, they're building a brand. And if they get a large enough following, there's an awareness that if they have a large enough following, they can convert that into sales.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting social media. It's why I don't spend a ton of time on it, to be honest, because I look at it through that perspective. Whereas Twitter to me is as much of a dumpster fire as it is. there's other stuff on Twitter. There's just like people just, you know, commenting on stuff.
I think Twitter is fine if you stay within a particular niche. Like the Twitter that I'm on, it's all web developers and some photographers. I don't get all the dumpster fire stuff because I don't see it. I don't follow it. It doesn't show up.
There are a few things, which is especially if people come from the world of advertising, just some stuff to keep in mind about content marketing as you're writing it. The first would be to embrace the fact that you are a publisher, right? Everyone is media. Everyone can start a blog and write something and be a publisher unto themselves. So start there. And then if you're thinking, okay, well, what do I write about? You want to be insightful. You want to be original. You definitely don't want to just look at 15 other blogs out there and say, I'm going to copy what they're doing. Mm-hmm. That's not valuable, right? And so you want to really do what's of value to your audience by understanding what their needs are, what their pain points are. And if you have an answer, right, that they would come to you and you have the reluctance to give away the store for free, don't give away the whole store, but give some of it away for free, because it's the way that you'll engender trust and build a relationship with that audience.
You build goodwill and you generate your authority and expertise in that field.
Yes.
Excellent.
Another one would be to speak human. Don't get a chip on your shoulder about trying to sound authoritative. Let the expertise speak for itself and just speak in, like you were sitting across a breakfast table from someone and trying to get them to understand what you're talking about. You don't have to make things sound official in any way. And don't recycle too much content. Try and put out original content whenever possible. And feed it into your newsletter and get it out there, get it out through your social media. That's fine. Like, push it out through as many channels as possible, but try not to recycle as much as possible. And, show as much as you can rather than just telling, right? Don't philosophize too much. Like, show them a real solution, show them a real answer to something. And that's always going to be helpful.
Nice. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think I've learned a lot from this episode that I can put into my own business, which is my favorite kind of episode.
Yeah, me too. And one thing I've learned is it's time to revive my newsletter.
That's right.
I did one newsletter in November or December, and that was the first one in over a year. I need to get back on it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Well, Gaurav, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been so great. I know everyone found a lot of helpful material here, and we hope you come back again sometime.
So, Gaurav, can you tell us where people can find you online?
Sure, yeah. On Twitter, you can find me at writtenbygaurav, but really capitalcommunications.ca. That's the agency at which I work. I'm a senior consultant there. I should be more active online, shouldn't I? Just saying that out loud makes me realize, wow, my online presence is a little thin.
I'm not that active either, and I make websites for a living, so.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming out today, Gaurav, and we'll definitely need to bring you back for another episode in the future.
Right. Yeah, thanks.
It was a pleasure, guys. Thanks so much.
The Website 101 podcast is hosted by me, Sean Smith. You can find me on LinkedIn. My username is Caffeine Creations, or on Twitter, where my username is Caffeine Creation, CaffeineCreation, or at my website, caffeinecreations.ca.
And by me, Mike Mella. You can reach me online at belikewater.ca. And also on Twitter and LinkedIn, where my username is Mike Mella. That's MIKEMELLA.